Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good night, everyone. We're trying a new phone system, but we're recovering chapter six on black male passivity, and this is part two. And we'll be covering, picking up where we left off, which was where the black man and the white female pair up in order to, for the white female to get back at the white male in her war on the, against the white male for power. And is there anybody have anything to say on that matter?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you're up, and Sean, you're live.
Hello, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Right, we left off on page 86, where we discussed the white woman, the white man, in a power struggle, and the white woman captured the black man for his male reproductive organ power in order to use it as a weapon against the white man in their own internal power struggle. Anybody have anything to say about that?
Well, I guess I would have to say, you know, I remember back in the day, we used to have a joke, and we'd say that our women and their women, they both were out there during the struggle, and both with their fists in the air, and then the white woman returned home and cooked dinner, and the black woman returned home and kicked her husband's ass. That type of thing led to, you know, what ended up happening in the 80s. They never followed through with what they were doing. They were in a constant struggle with their men, but they knew that they were going to support their men in the end.
Right.
We didn't get the same thing on our side.
No, they didn't. They didn't put out the memo.
Yeah.
Right. We missed it.
Exactly.
We on the losing end as always.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Have any observations about that?
Just
not. All right.
Okay.
Just make sure everybody.
I'm still thinking on that one. I don't know. I'm torn.
Okay, you're torn in what way?
I mean, it just seems like we're always getting a raw deal. I mean, even like the little jokes, you know, it's bad enough that we're the butt of racial jokes, period. And then when it comes to the sex wars, then we're the butt of those as well. And it's like those type of things are, I mean, it's like what came first, the egg or the chicken, you know, those type of things. Seem to me to put us back in defense mechanism, which makes us attempt to create that strong black woman persona, you know, and then again alienates the black man, you know, instead of us working together to try to tear down those walls and come to some kind of, I don't know, amicable agreement or whatever, you know, to just, you know, to rebuild the family. I mean, I don't understand it.
Well, I think we covered it last week. We talked about the thought processes for domination or for cultural survival, where when we arrived, we had to be reprogrammed. I mean, it's not common known to say, but you can program people just like you program your VCR or your cell phone. And we were programmed by, like, cell phones. Or any other device, or animals. You want to tame a wild animal. You know, people don't know they hypnotize those lions and tigers, like Siegfried and Roy. Those animals are under hypnosis, and they have ways and means of indoctrinating people, and all the life forms, if you will, to be of service. Now Siegfried just got eaten by that tiger. Was it two, three years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't expect that. What was wrong with this Negro tiger? He attacked Master. You know, it was unusual, but it happened. One of them was on stage live. He said, "What the hell is going on around here? Doing all these goddamn tricks? I'm gonna eat this son of a bitch."
Or something like that.
Yeah, like that. That son of a bitch.
That's right, Daddy.
And I watch Squid Billy. Rusty.
Oh.
Okay.
He snapped out of it.
He snapped freaking out of it. And said, "Hey, we supposed to be living in the jungle, laying on a big, you know, tall grass, eating and hunting down antelope or whatever the hell it is that they eat. And we up here on stage in an air-conditioned building, jumping through fire hoops. It's some bullshit."
And program like a SIM card.
Program like a SIM card, and that's why we act like this, you know. And what we doing with these? I mean, a lot of people read ISIS papers, so they say. I'm not criticizing anybody, but I don't think a lot of people really got it, and or reflected on it, or had anybody to reflect with on the writing. That's why we have this. We have this book club so we can read these works together, and we can bounce it off into some other people. And that, you know, I guess you read the book and you're like, "Oh, that can't be, because I'm the only person who thinks it in this author too." Well, I'm just gonna forget about it stuff. No, we're not gonna let you forget about it. Matter of fact, we have more of these titles that cover the same subject matter, and we're gonna analyze it very carefully. So you don't have to doubt or second guess. You can look at the way things are. And we can look and put this stuff under a spyglass, and we're going to talk about it very carefully. Now, in the very next paragraph here on page 86, she says, "From another perspective, the white male and white female homosexuality can be viewed as a final expression of their dislike of their genetic albinism in a world numerically dominated by colored people. The dislike of their appearance, though deeply repressed, causes a negation of the act of self-reproduction in various forms. This is the eventual origin of homosexuality. In a parallel activity to all familiar discussions of population zero and birth control, now current articulations in the white supremacist culture. Now, I don't know if you, how many of you are familiar with the European denigration of the act of reproduction called sex. And homosexuality is, I would say, one of their principal means of destroying the vehicles, the sex, the engines of reproduction. The engines of reproduction being the vagina and the penis.
Did you say vagina?
Yeah, I did. I was gonna say progyna. Is that? But I decided not to.
Okay.
But okay. Okay. Hey, but I said it anyway now. But now we see them doing all pumps on them and doing vacuum pressure on it and negative pressure, and they're punching their organs. I mean, people putting fists and hands and electrodes. These, and this is coming from a people culture that they got to hate their reproductive organs. They got to hate their ability to reproduce themselves to carry out these actions. To consume orally the very matrix of the life-giving seed that come from the man, and they consider it food and lotion. I mean, this is madness. I mean, you can't help but look at the people and say, these people, if you show this to somebody in a society that's alienated from this craziness that's going on over here, oh man, 3,000 years ago, he'd be like, where is the people that so we may go and punish them for these crimes? Because these are criminals. And in another group, someone posted a picture of a Caucasian family, totally nude, and they're all planking on top of one another.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, yes. Maybe you should probably share that with you. I mean, this is the kind of stuff they're doing. This is mad. But they're going to sit around and they're going to stand and hold court on your sanity, on your right to live, on your right to reproduce, on your criminality. And they're the biggest criminal walking around. That's called this is the epitome of pretentiousness and hypocrisy, and any other term you can think of that can describe these same activities. Anybody else have any thoughts on this?
I think I saw that picture you're talking about.
I think you have too.
I've seen it as well, but I think so. Now we're talking about the effeminization of the black male. So are you saying that these people directly or maybe even indirectly, are you saying that their activities is what led to?
Yes, that's right here on page 86. She's Dr. Welsing is telling us that they have an inherent a hatred for their own reproductive ability, their own reproductive powers.
Mm-hmm.
So they impart what she's getting in the next paragraph when we get there. I'll just go ahead and take you there.
Mm-hmm.
It says, all the aforementioned dynamics are components of the total dynamics of racism. Some of the methodologies used to achieve black male submission or effeminization warrant further examination. Unlike the white male, the black male does not arrive at a feminine, bisexual, or homosexual stance from any deeply repressed sense of genetic weakness, inadequacy, or disgust, which I refer to as primary effeminacy. That is, effeminacy self-derived and not imposed forcibly on others. She's saying basically that we give it because we our society was producing feminine males because we're being conditioned to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's forcing white people to be effeminate or submit. Nobody's imposing their males to go put on dresses and go get sex changes and mutilate their organs and some sick doctor that devises a plan to do so. Nobody's telling them to do it. They're doing this on their own. You know what I mean? So the previous paragraph was giving the backdrop, describing her analysis of their motivation to even develop that kind of idea that homosexuality is good. You know, I drank this poison all the time, and you should drink it too. Except the poison that they drank is the engine for their cruelty. See, all these criminal acts that they commit doing criminal acts keeps them in a criminal mind. It's something that they've cultivated to do what they do. And so, what Dr. Lila Africa say, sick people make people sick. So we have a society that cultivates effeminate males because the society that gave them this effeminate male value has effeminate males. Mm-hmm. As the dominant social male. Now, I'm not saying all white males are effeminate. No, I'm saying the dominant white males are effeminate. He said, how can they be dominant and passive at the same time? Obviously, they got some kind of disturbance in their male imprinting. And so in order for them to make sure they're secure, to survive, they have to make sure that they stay on top. They figured out how to dominate any other white male that could be a contender for the power. So they now, make other white males more less like they should be and more like them. So that's why they have secret societies. That's why they have all these institutions. Years ago, people complained about the Boy Scouts of America, how these scout leaders molesting boys.
Mm-hmm.
Or they talk about these Catholic priests molesting boys. Because they had to have these guardians in place to make sure the other white males develop aberrantly. And so those males will go out and carry this message and continue to find other black submissive people to expose their children to, who can, you know, turn them out as if not like they don't have, you know, black males in the community. They've already turned out, but they have to. It's the engine. It's the one that drives it. It keeps it going. And so they create the Eddie Longs and all of the other people that we see doing the things that they do. And so the only way to stop it is to not give them any credence.
And you know, it's funny how the two relate. I grew up and became an adult at an interesting time over a span of time where I could actually see these things fall into place smoothly the way they have. I couldn't call it smoothly, but according to their plan. but growing up, you know, just in that change where you have the women's rights movement, I was an infant at the point going through the 70s. I grew up through the 70s, and what was interesting was this stuff started to come out in the 70s, right at the time where we had a right to do it, to join in. You know, so you have a lot of people who are growing up where for the first time, like me, for instance, I was the first person in my family born after the civil rights movement, first one born in my family with civil rights, and so I grew up where this thing was pushed on me all of the time to now you have the freedom. We didn't have it, but you have the freedom to join in to everything, every part of the American dream you could join into, you know. And at the same time, you have these folks who now for the first time we're going to school with white people. This is in New York, and you can imagine all types of things going there. But now you have the freedom to mingle in with these people who are doing all these types of things, and so you started to see. While I was growing up, you started to see more homosexual men, more effeminate men. As time went on, you know, I think at my age it didn't become as normal as it appears to be now. Normalized, let's say that.
Yeah, that's right.
It appears to be now. But now, you know, you have you would have been killed if you were a high school kid coming in saying I'm you know, touching on another boy. Back in those days, but I see the even the young people, high school people interacting now And there's a lot of that where I live here now in Pittsburgh, and it's as though it's normal. My wife was just in the line today at the grocery store with a young boy with the tube top one, and in the line, and it was as though it wasn't an odd thing, you know. So you start to see these things develop, and over the time, I could see where it grew. From the last 40 years or so.
Yes.
And you know, it's funny that you would say that, because when you were speaking, it was reminding me of the time when I was growing up, and I grew up, well, I was born in the 70s, but during that time, that's when they were practicing a lot of that free love and, you know, trying to, I guess, say a lot of oneness or whatever, the little hippie movement and all of that kind of thing. And then on into the 80s when it kind of went into more like the Rainbow Coalition with Jesse Jackson and all of that, trying to embrace all the races, and you know, and I said, and it makes me think that we've become a sucker for love. I mean, you know, they just attach love to anything, and then it's like, because we want to be accepted, we want that, and so now it's okay. Now it's okay for you to join in and, you know, have a buffet of drugs on the table or whatever they do. You know what I'm saying, and participate in that, because it's free love. It's love. It's the love movement. It's peace, love, and happiness, you know, and everybody's just groovy, you know, and then on into, like I said, the 80s when it goes on, and then, you know, then when we come into the 90s when we see that the younger brothers and sisters are trying to rebel against that, and like, no, it's not right, you know, like with KRS-One and EPMD and all of them, you know, saying, no, this is not the way it's supposed to be. Then they're looked at like they're the outsiders. Like they're telling you something that's, you know, totally just wrong or whatever. So I can kind of, you know, coming from my little stance, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, and it's like I think we're saying the same thing. It's kind of like the idea of being progressive is tied with this.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of moving forward is tied with this. You know, if you're going to be progressive, you have to do this. You have to accept this as normal if you're going to be considered progressive.
Yes, progressive, all right. Progressive, you know, progressive is holding death and admiration, because that's what it is. I read a couple of, I think I posted a quote from Rondo Kennedy's Interracial Intimacies in AK. Some months ago, some social critic talked about how the black person would be, so he would be working hard to try to impress white people by doing everything that white people do, and that including trying to shed his blackness. You know, they got our number. I mean, black people talk about how smart we are. No, we're not. I mean, I'm not saying we don't have potential. We don't have the factors within us, but they've been repressed so deep or suppressed into our unconscious that we have to expand our field of consciousness in order to be able to access our true person or express our true personalities, because the ones that we have readily available to us don't serve us any good for the most part. We're about to go into overdrive shortly, evidently. But anyway, yes, they don't serve us much good, and so we have to go through these self-directed therapies, realizations, meditations, and all kinds of other processes to get ourselves through to the other side.
Jessica is on.
Okay, hello, Jessica.
Hello.
Hi.
Good evening.
All right. Good evening. We're about to go on overdrive in about 30 seconds, I believe.
Mm-hmm. You can go ahead and talk through it if you want to.
Okay. In her next segment, she talks about how the imposed internal dynamics of the black family, which she terms the survival unit, as within the racist system, functions to negate black manhood as fundamentally expressed in the relationship between breadwinning and true power potential.
Hmm.
You can crank that music up for the next 10 seconds. Well, but anyhow, even when high level income is allowed, there is no true power in its ultimate sense, meaning to support, protect, and defend the lives of oneself, one's wife, and one's children. Under any serious system of oppression, this right is denied the oppressed male. And with us, denial, there is a concomitant and proportionate loss of respect for manhood in the oppressed population. This attitude begins first within the oppressed man himself and radiates to all other members of the survival unit, that is the family as we know it. Anybody have any thoughts on this?
That reminds me of the Dawn. I can't remember when she wrote that particular essay, but it reminds me of the Dawn of 74. Okay, well that was about that was about a decade before this idea. If we know through the 80s, that coming of the woman, the ladies of the 80s, you know, that they there came a time where the man was denied the chance to be the breadwinner, and we saw that a lot going into the 80s. I remember in 83, I went in the military in 83, and by 83, remember with Reaganomics going on, there were no jobs. A lot of the jobs were given to black females, and by doing that, they were able to go with their affirmative action, hire a female and a black person at the same time and cover two. Black males, a lot of black males ended up without work, and it falls into what she was talking about, this denial of the opportunity to be the breadwinner.
Right.
I'm sure y'all are familiar with that time frame.
I was in junior high, but I do remember the ladies of the 80s talk and all of that, but I didn't understand it, what it really meant. And now I understand in retrospect from all my reading is that it was when black women finally became or accepted feminism. That was it. That was a decade. So in other words, black men had the whole of the 20th century, or let's say the 80 years, to get this masculine thing down and work it out and counter all this, feminist talk, and we didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't provide the logistics. We didn't provide the rationale for rejecting that.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it. Come on, as an oppressed population, you still don't hear that no rejection. You can turn on Michael Bay's and Tom Jones. They're not telling you feminism's bad and all these things are bad that we're talking about in this book.
That's right.
But we still, why do we turn our radios on and listen to them on the way to work? Why they're lying to us and we're giving them ratings?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We shouldn't be attending their churches, putting money in their plate, and giving them credibility by showing up or patronizing their advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we do as a people. That's what we do as oppressed people. We do things to our own detriment, and then therefore we maintain our own oppression. We buy it. We purchase it.
And if you think about it, it was an interesting false impression that it gave, where it actually, you know, it's a trick, but it made the man, it was able to degrade the man at the same time. You know, the woman would say, well, I have a job. Why are you having such a problem getting a job? And then even with all the literature put out about it, about this thing where you have end up with two minorities by hiring a male, a black female. We all understood this, but at the same time, it still sent that message that the black man wasn't attempting. And then so you had a lot of the 80s, entering the 80s, you had that. You know, you. Why don't you get a job? I have a job. Why don't you get a job? It was easy for me to get a job. You know, not putting all the blame on the women, just like you said. We should have together prepared that each other.
But that's a very interesting point, though, brother. I mean, because they pitted us against each other, because back in the 80s, that's when we had more black family units together. And, you know, and if I can go out and get a job, and I might not be as qualified as you, and then I come home with, we're vying for the same position, but I come home with the position only because I killed two birds with one stone. I'm black and I'm a female. Where, you know, and during that time, there's also a man back at my house who's depending on one of us to get a job. And so, you know, at the time it sounds good. It's like, baby, go ahead and take the job. You know what I'm saying? And then after he's going out and he's vying for a position, and he might be, you know, up against your wife, and then she gets the position, and it's like, you know, it trickled. It just created chaos within the homes, and then like after a while, the black family unit just fell apart because we weren't able to hold our respective roles.
And right, we're psychological. I was finished. I thought somebody else said something.
That's true. And just a decade earlier, I remember my my parents, both of them were janitors. You know, now 10 years later, my wife would have been my mother would have been working in an office, and my father still working as a janitor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it changed in that way, and then we created a situation where you turn to the janitor and say you're just a janitor, and I work in an office. You know, and then it started conflict between the two parents in the house.
Exactly.
Well, another issue we have to look at is that answering to the black man still not having the psychological skill set to lead his family through this tough time. You have a time where the woman's going to get economic opportunities that will be denied the man in a conventional work environment. I mean, he could create his own job, but nobody talks about entrepreneurship.
No.
You know, you got to go out and you have to find a job. Jobs have to be located like search for gold or something in the mountains. And you don't create jobs, but you have to find one that's supposed to be out there somewhere for you.
That's the way that entrepreneurship is discussed as well, that it's some magic thing and that you have to go and ask for money, startup capital, because there's no way that you would ever have the money to do it yourself, because they make it more complicated than it really is.
Right. And there's no encouragement from our social institutions to, I'm not talking about just words, but words are good, but even just being able to facilitate that kind of organization. Be able to help men to even work together to create businesses that doesn't exist. All of these lacking, they help create the instability in the home, because now you have your wife going to work for a Caucasian group and she's answering to them. That's her boss. Now she feels she has to listen to you because you don't pay no bills around here. I got to do what Mr. Keurig say.
Mr. Charlie say.
So now Mr. Charlie is running your house because he calls your wife. He tells your wife, you're going to stay late and you're going to work late with me tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then I can't come home because they won't let me go. And heaven forbid, she thinks Mr. Charlie cute.
Well, wait a minute.
But then on top of that, when you've already had to work overtime or whatever, and so you at work and he's mad because you've already worked past when you're supposed to be there, but expecting you to come home and cook because those are your obligations. But then you're looking like, well, why haven't you done it? Because you've been here. You know, and that creates
You're right.
Being outside of myself, when I'm upset, I can't cook. I can't do nothing. All I can think about is how mad I am and what the conversation is going to be like when she get home.
I think we have to create a situation where we're creating the job.
So
we don't have one. I remember the first business I opened up was with $2,000. Mm-hmm. We have to choose something that we could do, something that's profitable, and start. And even if we have to see, what we do is we think on such a scale that now we need to run to him for a loan.
Right, because we want to floss even in starting our own business.
Even in starting off, you know. And my first few years was rough, cleaning carpet, you know. But I was able to buy carpet machines for under $2,000 and start my own business. As soon as I finished college, I started a business. You know, and I was able to start. I felt comfortable starting small, and we have to get out of that mindset of starting large.
Well,
I mean, I worked for Marriott, and Marriott, the two Marriotts started with a hot dog stand. You know, small.
Yes, right. But back to the thought process is we have not organized our understanding. Because we have men who are frustrated because they don't know how to think that my wife is going to work for these foreign people, and we have to do this, and so he has to make this food. But he don't want to make the food because it's the woman's job. Well, obviously the roles have been reversed through some hook or crook. So we have to work to reverse them back. But we don't want to reverse back because we don't think it's our position to reverse roles. You see? So we just demand that somebody, well, you just do the cooking because I said so, or, you know, whatever, because I think this is my job. Well, we both have to work toward a common goal. We both have to do it. And if we're not doing it together, we're going to fall apart. And that's why a lot of those men, those marriages that were happening, I guess, as Sean just described, they're no longer around because they could not resolve the external initiated conflict that was injected into the survival unit, as Dr. Wilson describes it.
Okay,
right.
Yeah, 1 minute.
I think that conflict plays into this whole Planned Parenthood scheme also, because if you have a mother that is the breadwinner and a father at home, then how many women are going to be able to give birth, bounce back, go back to work right away because I'm the only person working? Well, who's going to feed the kids while I'm on maternity leave? It's just not feasible. So it plays into that whole, you know, population control, you know, for black families. If you can keep both of the people in the household that are supposed to be working from working, or you can keep that woman at work and that man at home, he's not really going to feel good about getting her pregnant. 'Cause I'm not even pulling my part of this load. I'm not going to, you know, try to expand this family. Like, how am I going to do that? I can't do that. And so the natural process of you wanting to create a family, all of that is broken down.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the next paragraph. What you're talking about, Jessica, it leads us right into the identity of black male sex machines. Well, that's going to rock because we're going to pick up there for part three next week.
Okay, because you got about 40 seconds, so make it happen.
Well, I can't read. We can't even start it, so we'll just pick up there next week.
That's what I meant, like say goodbye.
All right, goodbye, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Y'all
good night.
Have a
My God, good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Run through life, but now I had to quickly slow it down.
But I never ever compromise myself.
nothing at the end of the day.